Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, a new blueprint for doing better business in Britain. We hear from the Archbishop of Westminster, Vincent Nicholls. The Secretary General of the World Council of Churches shares his thoughts on the plight of minorities in Pakistan and ministering to those behind bars. We hear from the Secretary of the International Prison Chaplains Association. Over 200 people from the UK's leading businesses met in London earlier this week to discuss a new blueprint for doing better business in Britain. The conference explored the themes of conflict between profit maximisation and developing the common good, and the distinctive practical contribution of a faith-based ethical framework to personal and corporate responsibility. The conference was facilitated by the Archbishop of Westminster, Vincent Nicholls, who told my colleague Charles Collins more about the goals of this meeting.
A lot of our conversation was about the tensions between taking short-term perspectives as against longer-term perspectives and having an ethical framework in which discussions and decisions took place in both short and long-term. So it was a lot of it was about businesses being able to give a public account of themselves and of their underlying purpose that would help to restore trust.
Is there any concern? Sometimes businessmen say that the church doesn't understand their concerns. Does the church understand the perspective of the business owner?
What I have found here is that one of the most important documents that the Holy See has put out recently was the document on the vocation of the business leader from the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace. And many people in this country welcomed that because it was recognition by the Catholic Church of a vocation in their lives. And that we heard quite a bit this morning. And I think also the best business leaders who spoke this morning were quite clear that maximizing shareholder profit, profit full stop, was not the fundamental purpose of their business. And they recognize that if that is all the business is about, then, as one person said, the society will very quickly produce antibodies that will counteract that motivation and indeed bring it to crisis. And that, to some extent, is what we've seen.
Is there something the church can do more for businessmen on a spiritual level? For example, having retreats or associations to help businessmen and business owners form their spiritual lives and make the kind of decisions that they need to make?
One voice that we heard this morning was from a man who said that he, and he's a major leader of a company, that he had a regular meeting, a discussion kind of support group with people from different faiths who with whom he was able to establish a kind of forum, a kind of context for discussion in which he could examine some of the issues that he faced, some of his own motivation, and some of the richness that he could draw from practice and traditions of faith. I think it's important that the stance, for example, of the Catholic Church is that we actually demonstrate that our passion is for human well-being, and therefore, in as much as companies are contributors to that human well-being, then we have to find ways of speaking about our principles of Catholic social teaching that, if you like, fit in to the patterns that business are struggling with. So I give you one example. One chief executive emphasized how important it was for his worldwide company to appreciate the pride that people took in their work. Now, in Catholic social teaching, we talk about that under the heading of human dignity and the dignity of labor. So we just need to make the connections linguistically and in terms of motivation, and in that sense, get closer to business leaders, offer them opportunities for discussion, and I think in that sense, serve their part in society's project.
The Archbishop of Westminster, Vincent Nichols, speaking there to Charles Collins. The Geneva-based World Council of Churches held an international meeting on the plight of minorities in Pakistan this week to coincide with the ongoing 21st session of the UN's Human Rights Council. The event brought together representatives of all Pakistan's faith communities to discuss discrimination and, in particular, the misuse of the country's harsh blasphemy laws. To find out more, Vatican Radio's Mario Galgano spoke to the Secretary-General of the World Council of Churches, Norwegian pastor Dr. Olaf Fixitveit.
How can we, as an international fellowship of churches, address the difficult situation many Christians find themselves to be in Pakistan because of this blasphemy law, but also how can we support anyone who is under attack, Christians or not, for that reason?
And how is the situation in Pakistan for the Christians? Do you have right now some feedbacks from churches, from church leaders perhaps also, that explain to you the situation?
Bishop Samuel Asaria, the moderator of the Church of Pakistan, in his opening address today, said the following: "We are in a situation that is not any longer about human rights. It is about our future existence as Christians in Pakistan." I think that is a very strong statement, but it shows how difficult it is, but also how this particular issue of the blasphemy law is poisoning and also making the life of the churches in Pakistan very difficult. We hear in the media again and again about incidents that even young people, very young people, are accused for blasphemy and brought to court and sentenced. We also hear that many people are either brought to torture or even killed before the legal trial has happened. It is an urgent situation, and unfortunately it is also getting worse. What we also hear is that this is a result of a development over many, many years where different political leaders have used this law, political and military leaders have used this law as a way to control and maybe also to create fear in the population.
We had in the last days and weeks spoken a lot of this case of this young Rimsa Masih. Is this case or case like this young child also a subject? Do you have spoke about this?
Yes. Well, we have not addressed it as such, but it has been mentioned in different speeches. I've also mentioned it in my speech as an example of both how this misuse creates really both very negative image of Islam, but also a very negative image of Pakistan, and probably is the opposite of what is intended or what is wanted, if there is a good intention behind the law to create respect for the faith and the religion of others. I also use this case to say that maybe this shows how difficult it is at all to have laws like this. Even if we not first talk about the misuse of the law, maybe we also need to discuss the law itself. Is it formulated in a way that opens for this misuse? And finally, is it really possible to have laws like this that have a good effect? Or are they rather working to the contrary of it, of their intention?
What can churches do together to do something perhaps against this discrimination in Pakistan?
Well, I think it is very important that we bring this to a public knowledge, that we also discuss together with representatives from the Muslim community who are also here, how can we together, Christians and Muslims and Hindu, work together for a better future and call for the solidarity among us as people of faith, that we can be in solidarity with one another and counteract this kind of misuse of the law. Secondly, I think it is very important that we also ask those who are working politically with Pakistan to strengthen their commitment to address these issues, but also to encourage Pakistan to find another solution to avoid this very destructive development.
Thanks there to Dr. Olaf Fuchsy-Tweit, Secretary General of the World Council of Churches. IPCA, the International Prison Chaplains Association, is an ecumenical organisation set up in the mid-1980s to support those working with some of society's most marginalised people. Whatever their crimes or length of sentence, prisoners are often seen as the least deserving of our care, excluded, rejected, at times barely even considered as human beings. Yet in the Bible, we're reminded by Jesus himself of the importance of ministering to those behind bars.
It's in Matthew 25 that we should treat those in prison as though they're the presence of Christ with us.
Reverend Bill Cave has been in prison ministry for the past 17 years. He currently serves as secretary and vice chairman of IPCA Europe, which will be helping to organise a global conference in Sydney in 2015.
I spent 2 years working in London in a number of the London prisons, Brixton, Belmarsh, Feltham, with young offenders. And then in 1997, a temporary prison was opened in Portland Harbour. This is on the south coast, about 100 miles from London. And I was dispatched from London to become the chaplain of what was nicknamed the prison ship. And I've stayed in Dorset ever since. This is in the countryside, but changed prisons, and at the moment I'm the chaplain of a prison called the Verne, which is on the Isle of Portland. We have 600 prisoners, 300 are from outside the UK, and of the 300 British prisoners, approximately half of them are life sentence prisoners. We have a greater variety of crimes and offences with the English prisoners, because life sentence prisoners are most commonly there for crimes of extreme violence, murder, serious attacks on other people, repeated offences. So the foreign national guys are more normally involved with drugs than the British guys. Sadly, it's crimes of violence. Alcohol very often plays quite a part.
What do you feel that you are offering?
I think the role of a chaplain offers a number of things. The first response which comes to mind is probably a non-judgmental presence. There's a wonderful character in Dante's Inferno who acts as kind of tourist guide to Dante as he's going round. A prison chaplain is pretty much the same. In earthly terms, judgment is carried out quite correctly by secular courts. An article of faith is, of course, that there's a greater judgment. And I think the chaplain's role is simply to accept the human beings as they are. And sometimes when people have committed terrible crimes, it does take a degree of detachment, perhaps charity, acceptance, but to be a non-judgmental presence, encourage people's personal development. For those who are of a religious background and culture, I've got the responsibility of also making sure that there's proper religious provision, not only for my own Church of England tradition, but also I need a team of Catholic colleagues and other faith colleagues. An important thing to understand about the UK prison context at the moment for chaplains is that inter-Christian cooperation is well established, but within the last few years there have been big developments in the need for inter-religious cooperation.
And so do you have Muslim, Jewish and
other
faith?
Oh, I have got a splendid and very wise and sensible Muslim colleague. We have a number of rabbis who will visit us from London. I've got a Buddhist colleague. At the moment, I think for the first time in 6 years at the Verne, I've actually got a complete team of colleagues for almost every faith tradition that you could think of.
Is it normal for most prisoners to want to see a chaplain who can offer them some kind of spiritual comfort, or is it perhaps the exception to the rule?
I think spiritual comfort is too easy and too simple a word. because it is a little bit like the chaplain in the Camus novel L'Étrangère, who is very much inappropriate because he's trying to impose his agenda on the prisoner in that novel. But people in prison, whether it's newly arrested or whether it's people who have been in prison for many, many years, virtually everyone I've met in prison is grateful for the opportunity to be able to talk about themselves with the presumption that the conversation will be confidential. And I simply say there's a presumption of confidentiality because obviously in prison there are certain circumstances when for chaplains, and I have to say even for Catholic colleagues, we have to give warnings to prisoners that there are some, but very limited circumstances where conversations may have to be reported to other people. It's normally if people are confessing to further crimes or expressing a fear that they might be hurt by someone else or in fact expressing an intention to harm other people. But with chaplains, there is a definite presumption that everything you talk about is confidential. If we think that's going to be threatened, then in fact what we do is offer a warning saying if we carry on with this conversation, then you know we reach a problem about the issue of confidentiality. But the starting point is that we're there as a confidential listener.
How challenging a ministry do you find this to be for you personally?
Oh, very challenging. But then, if I'm honest about myself, I'm the kind of person who enjoys a vocational challenge. And having spent 12 years as a chaplain in a modern university, the opportunity to go into a context where people are in need. And at the end of the day, prison chaplaincy is a gospel ministry. It's in Matthew 25 that we should treat those in prison as though they're the presence of Christ with us. And I'm the kind of person who actually likes to be constantly challenged, have to think hard, have to work quite hard as well and respond to difficult things. But always, I think also as an Anglican priest in ministry for 30 years, the constant joy of knowing that actually the fruits of ministry are things which the presence of Christ and our faith produces around us. There was a lovely icon in the theological college where I trained, where the text comes from John chapter 15, "You did not choose me, but I chose you." And it's a lovely, I think, reassurance that actually where we are in ministry is a part of God's will for our lives rather than anything we've chosen ourselves. That helps sometimes in prison, I can assure you.
I imagine that over the years there must have been moments that were particularly difficult, particularly challenging, even for somebody who enjoys, as you say, a challenge in your vocation.
There are inevitably for chaplains situations when you find yourself being uneasy about what coercive institutions are doing, because prisons at the end of the day are by definition coercive institutions. And I think any chaplain or perhaps any member of staff who is trying to work faithfully and with integrity as a human being will find that he or she is challenged a little bit about what the nature is we're doing, because prisons deprive human beings of their liberty. Obviously in an interview like this I can't give you a chapter and verse and details, but I think with experience and wisdom I've developed a certain attitude and approach to what you might call the professional challenges. I can think of one or two occasions, but it is a very small number of occasions indeed when those newly sentenced in prison have expressed so little understanding of what it is that they had done to get them into prison that you find it very hard to accept the humanity of some people. But you have to be very patient. You think, well, perhaps it may take 5 or even 10 years for someone really to understand the enormity of what they've done, especially if it's someone who's been responsible for someone else's death.
You've worked, as you say, in a number of different contexts, in a city in London, out there in the Dorset countryside. There's a lot of concern about problems in British prisons, problems of overcrowding, lack of adequate care for people in difficult situations. Are you dealing with this at all?
I'm not here as an advocate for the UK prison service, but I think it's important to get talk about overcrowding into context. When we talk about overcrowding in UK prisons, we're talking about running institutions with greater numbers of prisoners in than they are designed and resourced to take. I think it is true to say that in comparison to the situation in that I hear from chaplaincy colleagues in some other European countries, some African countries, some Asian countries, we are talking about a different magnitude of problems. So the UK is, especially in time of cutbacks, now having to run some establishments at a slightly greater level of occupancy and use than we might find desirable by European standards. I think compared to other countries in the world, still we are observing the rule of law, we're observing European human rights standards. But in an age of austerity, obviously we have logistical problems. You're quite right that there are many situations, especially those involving the imprisonment of women, sometimes the austerity of regimes for younger people, when I think caring human beings must reflect and think we could still do better. Physical conditions have improved enormously in the 17 years that I've been with the prison service. The first place I started, prisoners still had buckets in their cells for bodily functions, and the nickname was slopping out in the mornings, which was a degrading and smelly and awful process. Virtually every cell now in UK either has internal sanitation or 24-hour access to toilets and showers and things like that. So the level of human decency and dignity has come up even in the time that I've been with the prison service.
Another of the challenges that quite often makes it into the media, at least, is that of people, of course, taking their own lives while in prison. Is this something that you've also had to deal with during your ministry?
I'm very fortunate that I can only think of, I think, three suicides in establishments that I've been a chaplain for. Each year it would be typical that between 60 and 100 people out of the 85,000 that are in custody in the UK would succeed in ending their own lives. Ideally, that figure should be zero. Every person's situation is different. The first of those was a man who had just been arrested for terrible crimes, and I think would have been broken, or obviously felt that he would have been broken, to appear in court, to have to face trial and possibly judgment for what he had done. Another one of the three, the last one was... And the three which happened were unexpected. Was a man who had been in prison for many, many years, and I think had got to a particular point of very low despair. The one in the middle was someone who had had just a moment's bad news from home, and obviously once again felt very much in despair. I hope that both colleagues I've worked with and the atmosphere that I would try to create amongst prisons in places where I've been, that we are always working on suicide awareness, suicide prevention policies, to encourage even prisoners to take a care for their fellow prisoners, really to try and help people through what is, at the end of the day, it's a terrible experience to have to live for many years in prison, whether it's a caring prison or whether it's an austere and very difficult and Spartan existence.
Do you work also with family members of prisoners?
In the prison I'm in at the moment, because we've got people who live outside the UK and also very long-term prisoners, there's very little contact with families. Chaplains in some other institutions where people are doing shorter-term sentences and are based more in their home communities do have what they're calling community chaplaincy schemes and will work more closely and carefully with family members to see if family ties can be continued, whether relationships can be restored and good release plans set up for people. So there are colleagues who are doing that kind of work. It's not a high demand in the prison where I'm working at the moment.
What do you see then as the most, if you like, successful keys to really helping a person, as you say, in this extraordinarily difficult situation of a maybe even life sentence?
In the Gospels, we talk about love your neighbour as yourself. And the ideal in society, obviously, is we hope that people would learn to love and express concern for all our fellow human beings, but that's a two-sided verse in the Gospels. It actually also, the other part of it is love yourself. And for some people who have committed crimes against other people, or who may also be victims of ill treatment from other people, and that doesn't, it may explain behaviour, it doesn't excuse behaviour. The issue of self-esteem and loving yourself as the starting point to learn how then to respect other people is important. I think it's probably more than important, it could well be essential. And so if you want to say that chaplains at the starting point of this journey of restoration are actually encouraging people to learn how to be nice to themselves. Obviously, in religious terms and in the faith and commitments of the Catholic Church and of all the Christian churches, we're talking about losing the burdens of sin, the things earlier in life which burden us down, or imprison us as human beings in ourselves. This is where the Christian gospel and the presence of Christ, I think, has such a powerful and life-transforming possibility to offer. And of course, it's the greatest privilege as a chaplain when prisoners come into chapel. It's a humbling and profound experience as a priest to see hands, because in Protestant churches we normally administer communion into hands, to see hands in front of you seeking the presence of Christ in the Eucharist, knowing what previously the awful things which hands may have done to fellow human beings, and yet having these hands coming and wanting to receive the presence of Christ.
My thanks there to Reverend Bill Cave, Secretary and Vice Chairman of IPCA Europe, the International Prison Chaplains Association. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. But just before we go, a message from the head of the English Programme, Sean Patrick Lovett, about some novel ways of listening to Vatican Radio if you have an Android smartphone.
If you have an Android smartphone, visit our website and download Vatican Radio's first app. It's free. Go to www.radiovaticana.va. and click on the icon in the upper right-hand corner. The version for iPhone and iPad is coming soon.
You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.